Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode we have here on Suspense Radio. This is going to be one of our greatest shows, especially on announcements that we have coming up here. I'm so happy to have you guys with us tonight. I am your host, John Robb, and it's going to be an exciting show because we're going to have author Spencer Quinn and T.L. Hines for you here in a little bit. And we got some, like I said, some exciting announcements that we're going to list, especially with guests that are coming up on the radio show. So here's your time because you've got about 60 seconds because sit back, relax, because 60 minutes of Suspense Radio begins right now.
Welcome to my nightmare. I think you're gonna like it. I think you're gonna feel you belong.
Again, I want to thank everybody for joining us here tonight on Suspense Radio. Beautiful Friday night here in Southern California. Not sure where you guys are all listening to, but hopefully you guys are as fired up as I am. Like I said, we have some very, very exciting news to tell you. First, I want to let you know that on last Tuesday, well, not last Tuesday, but just a couple days ago on Tuesday, we had Les Roberts on along with another great guest, Julie Kramer, that we had on the air. And so you can always go back and listen to all the archive shows. We had Tess Garrison on. We had Alan Jacobson, Lisa Unger, Lisa Black, Karen Slaughter, Richard Deutsch. All those were previous guests we've had on the show. And you can go back and listen to all of those great shows that we had on. You know, coming up here for October, I want to remind everybody here, on Tuesday, we're going to have Todd Ritter and Mark Greeny on. So that's going to be an exciting show. But we're doing something different here, too. We are having a special show on the 13th of October. That's going to be at 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern time. It's only going to be a 30-minute show because we had to work around this guest schedule to get him on. And it's none other than lawyer author Alan Dershowitz is going to join us here for 30 minutes on October the 13th. To talk about his latest legal thriller, The Trials of Zion, along with many other things. We are not going to have a show coming up next Friday because we are going to be in VoucherCon. We're going to be smoozing with all the authors and everything else going on, getting more name out. So we're going to be up in San Francisco. Hopefully some of you will be up there too. If you do, you see us, come up, say hi. We don't really have free stuff, but heck, you know, we'll shake your hand and, you know, we'll do all the stuff and we'll, you know, we'd love to interact with everybody. So Erica Spindler and Alice Leota are going to be here on the 19th, James Rollins and Iris Johansson on the 22nd, Steve Barry and Jeremy Robinson on the 26th, and then we're going to have Alan Jacobson back and John Miller on the 29th. But we have some very, very exciting news because we have said last week that on November the 30th, we are going to also have Patricia Cornwell that's going to be on the radio show. Right before I came on air, I just got an email. I don't have a date yet, but we are going to have here John Saul on in November, Before his book comes out, November 23rd, he is going to have his paperback. So we're going to have John Saul come on the air here with us on November to talk about his paperback. Also, we are going to be able to have, and I'm going to announce this now just because I want to say it. I don't have a date, but I've been dying to release it. It's going to be late January or early February. We have to work out the date. But you are going to hear on Suspense Radio, Stephen King is going to be joining us here on Suspense Radio, like I said, late January or early February, depending on his schedule. We're trying to work that out. Stephen King will be with us live. So mark down your calendars and make sure you keep checking out to see, you know, what's going on, especially with all the guests that are coming up, because we are going to have star-studded lineup without a doubt. So you definitely want to make sure that you stay in tune with that. Another bit of news that we just found out about was we just had our local bookstore here, which is Barnes & Noble, which is right near where out in Southern California. They just announced that on December the 31st, they are going to be closing because they're saying ebooks are going to take over their business. And what that does is that shows us that what we've been preaching here for the last couple months is that ebooks is definitely going to be the wave of the future, just like it was with DVDs and CDs and everything else coming here. You can have more of the electronic age coming out and taking, you know, these things away, which is what Dorchester now knows as far as they closed down their publishing house. And they're going to go all electronic and print on demand only. And you're going to start seeing a lot more from a lot other people. And that's what's going to happen. Now, to mention a couple of our friends that have ebooks out there now is one of our contributors is Starina. And we published her book under Suspense Publishing. And it's called In the Name of Revenge. You can find that on Amazon, Smashwords. It's going to be on Barnes & Noble. It's going to be on Borders and places like that. You can find that all over the place. But the one thing I want to do is that Star has a website called queenwriter.com where she publishes a quarterly newsletter. Now, I would love everyone to go and bombard her with emails from her site and tell her quarterly's just not good enough. It's got to be monthly. This is why we do Suspense Magazine monthly, because we need more information. And she's probably going to kill me for saying this, but you know what? That's just the way it goes. She can do this monthly and write because she is so fantastic that we need to have more of this out. Also, the other thing that we have is Terry Ann Armstrong with Morning Menace. You want to check that out. That's available that we published. We've also published Scott Fadd and his book, The King of Nod. We have a couple other people for Suspense Publishing that we're getting to go, and they're going to have their ebooks published. Now, our first guest tonight has his book that is coming out, and it actually just came out September the 28th. And I want to go ahead and I want to welcome Spencer Quinn to the air right now. So, Spencer, how are you doing? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. The pleasure's mine.
Yes, we talked earlier this morning, which was fantastic. That was exciting. I'm like, who's calling me at 6 a.m.? And then I got the voice and called you back, and it was like, 6 p.m., we got it. That's all
right.
Right, but that's good.
Yeah, I just missed the AM, PM thing. A simple mistake to make.
No big deal. Hey, we're just glad that you're excited to be on because, you know, I don't know if you were able to hear some of the, you know, a lot of the guests that we have coming on, but, you know, we have a lot of great guests that are going to be on the radio show, and it's great to have you on to talk about your latest book. Yeah, to talk about your latest book, which is the third in the Chet and Bernie mystery series. It's called To Fetch a Thief, and it came out September 28th. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody a little bit about, you know, your third installment here of this?
Well, first, I don't know whether people know about the series at all. The first book in this Chet and Bernie series was Doggone It. The second was Thereby Hangs a Tale, T-A-I-L, and the third is To Fetch a Thief. And these are classic mystery stories of the buddy type where there's a private investigator and his buddy. And the story is told by the buddy in the first person. You know, the model, of course, goes back to Conan Doyle, where Sherlock Holmes was the detective, and he had Dr. Watson told the story in the first person. In this case, Bernie Little is the detective, and I wouldn't want to call him a sidekick, but Chet is his dog, and Chet tells the story in the first person. What makes this, I think, different from other animal detective fiction, which is now a whole category, is that Chet is not a human being in a dog suit. He is a dog in every way. He doesn't talk or anything like that. But he has a narrative going on in his head. And as I'm sure anyone who knows dogs, you know, believes, of course they have a narrative going on in his head. And the narrative that Chet has is the narrative of the cases that they're working on. And so he tells these stories in the first person.
And so that is something that is definitely different by doing it that way. In fact, it's so good because Chet the dog has his own website. And is that the best way for people to find you, is through Chet the dog's website?
ChetTheDog.com is Chet's website. He's also on Twitter at Chet the dog. But yes, ChetTheDog.com is the best place to learn about these books, the three in the series. This is one of the most wonderful things that's happened to me about this. A whole community has arisen in the sort of comment section. Every day there's a new post every day at ChetTheDog.com, almost always in Chet's voice. And there's a whole world that's grown up on the below the line area down there of people who are into this series and who have formed friendships among themselves. It's really great. As to the story of To Fetch a Thief, Chet and Bernie, what the Little Detective Agency, they specialize in missing persons cases, but in this book, which is the third in the series, the missing person is actually an elephant named Peanut. They go to the circus one day, they get tickets free, they're comp some tickets because of another case they're working on, and when they go to the circus taking Bernie's son, Charlie, a little boy who actually doesn't live with them anymore because Bernie's divorced, the elephant that they are all looking forward to seeing is gone. Peanut the elephant and his trainer, Peanut's trainer, is also gone. And so the missing persons case begins with the missing elephant and takes off from there.
Now, was it your intention, was the Chet and Bernie mystery the first thing that you wrote in the mystery thriller genre?
No, I would have to say that it isn't. This comes actually sort of somewhat late-ish in my career. I wouldn't say late-ish. Let's say middle-aged part of the career.
Yeah,
I'm in the middle-aged part of my career. Well, I don't know. I guess you don't know, John, but it's out there. It's public knowledge that Spencer Quinn is actually a pen name for Peter Abrahams, and that's the name on my birth certificate, if I could find it in my desk here somewhere.
Right.
And under that name, I've written many mysteries. I've won an Edgar Award and a number of other kind of awards, too. But I'd never written in the first person before, and I'd never written anything having to do with dogs before, at least with a dog as a central character. And when I wrote this book, my agent thought, I mean the first book, Doggone It, the first in the series, my agent thought, this is so different from the rest of your work, we should really give it a different name and to find the audience that would be there for sort of a lighter type of fiction. Not that I'm saying that this series is totally light, because it isn't. There's a dark thread running throughout. But clearly it's not as dark as some of my other books like Oblivion, and End of Story, or Nerve Damage, where in some of those actually, you know, the main character is not in very good shape at all at the end. So we went, it wasn't a secret, but we went with a pen name that was thought up by my wife and my agent, who both are fans of Spencer Tracy, and everything's been good ever since.
And just out of curiosity, maybe people would like to know, why did you decide to go with, you know, a different name instead of writing under your regular name?
Well, I think it's because these stories are so different. They're much lighter in tone. They're much funnier because you know, the books I wrote under my regular name are darker, and they're less funny. There's a kind of, you know, it's hard to talk about. It's hard to pat your own wit on the back, right? But
Pat it. Hurt your elbow. Pat yourself.
No,
right
no, I don't. I wasn't brought up to do that. I wasn't brought up to, you know, do things like quote my own reviews. In fact, you know, the first time I saw that happen, I was in Miami at a book conference years ago, and a writer got up, you know, on one of these panels, and he began quoting one of his own reviews. And, you know, I'd been brought up never to do that kind of thing. And when you listened a little, if you knew anything about reviews, you could tell that they weren't even that good. So I only actually quote one review that I ever got. I write for kids, too. I wrote the Echo, under the Peter Abrahams name, I wrote the Echo Falls mystery series. They were New York Times bestsellers, and they sent me into various schools, and the book was for middle grade kids, you know, fifth through eighth grade, and I was in a place where, I think it was out in the Midwest, and they said, we've got some gifted third graders, and they've read your book. It was called Down the Rabbit Hole, the first book in the Echo Falls series, and can the gifted third graders who've read your book come to the talk? And I said, well, of course, I wanted to meet the gifted third graders. So after the talk was over, the gifted third graders came up to me. There were five of them. Excuse me. And the one, you can, these are tiny people. And the one with freckles and red hair and thick glasses, he looked up at me and he said, I read your book. It was pretty good. And that's the only review I ever quote. And it comes from a certified gifted person.
Very nice. Hey, you know, when any third grader says anything is pretty good, that means it's really, really good.
It's got to be good, right.
It has to be. Right, because they don't care, because they have no filter.
They have no filter, which is terrific. And they're very like Chet the dog, you know, who tells these stories, because he doesn't have – he's really – The fun part of writing a character like Chet is that, first of all, he's the quintessential unreliable narrator. And you don't find, especially in mystery fiction, you don't find much in the way of the unreliable narrator. And second, he's pure id in many ways. And it's really fun to write a character like that.
So how does Bernie then, you know, kind of fit into everything, since Chet's more of the narrator? How does Bernie kind of fit into your books?
Well, of course, Chet is totally devoted to Bernie. And this is the kind of symbiotic team. You know, Chet, you know, as a dog, his senses, especially his sense of smell and his sense of hearing, are acute. Far, far superior to Bernie's. What Bernie has, though, is, you know, he can follow a logical chain, which is the traditional way that a detective solves stories, cases, in detective fiction. So together, they make a wonderful team.
And so since this book just came out September 28th, you know, like every author, they always have the next one going. So how long or how far do you see the series going? I mean, do you see a no-end infinity, or do you say, no, I think I'm only going to do three or four more books, or maybe one or two, or, you know, how far do you see it going?
Well, I've signed contracts for more.
Oh, well,
then there you go.
You
know, I mean, so that changes everything. So I'm not like, you know, some football player who, you know, can walk away. And I don't want to walk away. I love writing these characters. So I'm going to be doing this for a while.
And do you have any thoughts about going back to using Peter Abrahams again and using that name and writing
a little
bit more?
Peter Abrahams, okay. Definitely. Oh, no question. I am writing a new middle grade series for Penguin right now. The first one was just finished, and it's coming out next year. So, yes, I do. Yes, I do the two at once.
Well, so that's a little different. So you have one side that goes to Penguin and one side that does Simon & Schuster. That's
right.
That's kind of different, isn't it?
It's Well, not only is it different, but it's really nice. I have two of everything. I have two editors. I have two publicists. And, you know, writers, especially in a difficult climate for, you know, novels and literature and all what you were talking about before, e-books and everything, when someone at one house says something to me, I can, you know, line that up with what I've been told somewhere else. I have a controlled experiment going on. So it's, yes, that's really nice.
So
I also like writing for two different age groups.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah, because you're writing more adult and you're writing more kids.
Yes,
and
both. So it's really good to do both.
And that's got to be a little difficult because your mind has to go in two totally separate places. And if you're working on two books at once, you really got to change your mindset here while you're doing it. Or do you do one fully and then you do another one fully and you don't mix the two together?
I do one fully and then I do the other one. Yeah,
okay,
I couldn't mix them together. But as for putting my head into, well, both these series are written in the first person, which is strange because I'd written all these books before and never done the first person. But just the voice takes over, really. I don't do a whole lot of thinking about, well, how am I going to get into the head of Chet the dog? That's never happened at all. I just started and the voice happened.
Now, just from thinking here, have you thought of maybe making a book where Bernie is going to be doing the narrating in one of your books more instead of Chet doing it, maybe switching up a little?
I haven't thought of that. I would have to give it some serious consideration. But my first reaction would be, no, I'm not going to do that. This works the way it is because of, well, first of all, I wanted to write mysteries here that would work as a mystery. Like, I don't want to shortchange the mystery. I wanted to write mysteries that would work even if it was being narrated by, you know, that Bernie had a human pal. You know, and you see that all the time in mystery fiction. I wanted to do that. And I believe that these mysteries do work. I wanted to not shortchange the mystery. But what you get through a narrator like Chet is it's like you're playing a classic piece of music on an unusual instrument. And that's why I want to continue doing it like this. You know, it's a tremendous challenge to write a coherent mystery where normal pieces are missing. And, you know, the normal pieces that would come from a human narrator are missing in this. Because Chet, you know, for example, if some important conversation is happening and someone throws Chet a chew strip, he's going to miss key parts of that. And it's been a lot of fun for me to write a mystery that still fits together that's missing those key parts.
And I want to remind everybody that we are talking right now with Spencer Quinn, and it is about his latest book, To Fetch a Thief, the third in the Chet and Bernie mystery. You can find out more information by going to chetthedog.com. That's C-H-E-T, thedog.com, and be able to find out exactly, you know, everything that there is to know about the Chet and Bernie mystery series. And To Fetch a Thief just came out September 28th, so everybody needs to go out and get it. So now, Spencer, so when we're sitting here and we're, you know, trying to look at, you know, everything that you've done and accomplished, would you tell people that might not have read anything by Peter Abrams or by Spencer Quinn, which one would you tell them to go, you know, read first, to maybe get an idea of, you know, who you are as a person, maybe not just as an author, but maybe just as a person?
Oh, who I am as a person.
Right.
Well, I think I'm a combination of Chet and Bernie, really. Half dog, half man. I would like people to read the Chet and Bernie series. It's a very good question. As a person, I would look at a book I wrote called Oblivion, that came out it was from Morrow. It came out in 2005. Joyce Carol Oates wrote a long piece about it in the New Yorker magazine. You could maybe, that might be a place to start.
The reason why I asked that question is because a lot of people want to know who the author is outside of the pages, because all they get to know is the author in the pages. And a lot of people say, well, is that what you are like in person or in personality? Or is that the kind of person you are? And a lot of times it's, no, it's not. I'm a character, or I write as, you know, characters. So that's kind of why I ask, so people can maybe get to know who you are as just, you know, just a person.
Well, as a person, I'm a writer. You know, I was lucky enough to be born with a certain kind of imagination, and I loved reading, and I loved being in the imaginary world created by, you know, other writers. And I was also very lucky that I had a mother who was a writer, too. She wrote for television a long time ago, and she taught me a lot about the nuts and bolts of it. So, you know, there are two parts of being a writer, in my opinion. You know, one is the imagination, and the other is this toolkit that you have. And it's really good you can probably be a successful writer with one or the other, but it's really good to have both. And I was very lucky in that. Other than that, I'm a straight kind of family guy. You know, I've got four kids and a wife and a bunch of dogs that we've had over the years. And I love sports. I play tennis almost every day. But, you know, so far I've said nothing interesting about that at all. I'm just an ordinary guy.
So your first book was Dog on It. And would you say that that's a good place for people to start with the Chet and Bernie mystery series?
Or absolutely. I've written this series so that they can be read in any order, but since they are numbered, you know, why not start with, and Dog on It is in paperback now, you know, why not start with Dog on It? But there's Dog on It there by Hank Zatale and To Fetch a Thief, which is now out in hardcover and also as an ebook, of course.
Well, now we have a question that just came into us here, and they'd like to know, and a lot of these typically come from, you know, authors that are looking for more information, is what do you do for book tours and marketing, and do you have one thing that works best for you in selling books?
Oh, well, that's a great question. You know, I'm guessing that this blog, which was not my idea, I mean, the publisher said, you know, would you be willing to, you know, blog about Chet? And I said, not really, but I will do a blog that's in the voice of Chet. And I think this can, you know, there are probably an average of 100 comments a day on Chet's blog. So it's been successful. Not only that, some of the commenters did this most moving thing. It was just wonderful. They made to coincide with the publication of To Fetch a Thief, they made a quilt. And these are people from all over the country, and each one made a little square and you know, having to do with like a picture of their dog or some scene from the books or dog bones or something like that. And they sent all the individual squares to another reader of the blog and of the books who was a professional quilter, and she made this gorgeous quilt that just came in the mail to me. And it says Chet the Jet at the top, because Chet is sometimes called Chet the Jet by some of the people, you know, some of the perps that he brings in. And, I mean, that was a wonderful thing. So I think I don't think of that as a marketing tool. I think of it as a blessing, but that's been a wonderful thing. I'll do whatever the publisher does. I was in Phoenix and Houston last week, you know, doing book tours, and I think those things work very well if, you know, you get enough people. Meet readers, and it's the meeting readers that's the best part of it.
Fabulous. And we just had just a tad of a technical thing right there, so don't worry about that. But, and you know, this has been very fascinating to hear everything about, you know, Chet and Bernie and the mystery and everybody. This was Spencer Quinn, and you know, the interview just flew by. It's already, you know, it's already passed. I can't believe that, you know, it's already done. That's been, you know, fabulous. So Spencer, I want to thank you so much for coming on. And remember, chetthedog.com. go find out about this great series, Chet and Bernie Mystery Series, with his latest book, To Fetch a Thief. So, Spencer, thank you again so much, and we have to stay in touch so we can bring you back on for, which we know there's going to be more books here on Chet and Bernie coming up.
There are going to be more. So thank you, yeah. And the pleasure was mine, John. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a great night.
You too.
So everybody, again, that was Spencer Quinn that we just had on the radio, and that was the Chet and Bernie Mystery Series. ChetTheDog.com is the place that you want to go to find out more information about, you know, this series that's new, and he also writes under Peter Abrams, so you can find out about those information too. But right now, I want to go and bring on our next caller, or not next caller, but our next guest, and it's T.L. Hines. It's his latest book called The Falling Away. And T.L., I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Yes. So I just want to go ahead and let you go ahead and start here, because your book, The Falling Away, it's about an Iraqi war vet. You're running from some demons. So it's kind of set more in the today's day and age part. So can you kind of tell everybody, you know, a little bit about that book?
Well, sure. The Falling Away is actually the main character is Dylan Runzahead is his name. He's an American Indian, a member of the Crow tribe in Montana, and is also an injured Iraq war vet. Comes home from his injury in Iraq and is, you know, very much a broken man in many ways, and really searching for himself, searching for his lost identity, and he ends up in the midst of a cult on the high plains of Montana, and discovers too late that it's kind of a center of demonic activity. And so the book is essentially him trying to extricate himself from the cult.
Now, again, was this kind of an inspiration of, you know, what's going on with the Iraqi war and the veterans and the problems that maybe they're having coming back?
Oh, yes, to some extent. I think any book, when you look at it, it always has, or at least any of my books always have, you know, three or four different kind of inspirations. And I think that's the fun of putting together a book, is you have, you know, a couple of different unrelated threads that somehow make a connection in your mind, and you put them together. So certainly the Iraq war vet was something that stuck with me, and I had a close friend that, you know, I grew up with since childhood, who's an officer in the Army and is an Iraq war vet, and has been over on tours of duty and wasn't injured, but
thank
it was
God.
Just that
God.
Yeah, amen. And that character was inspired a little bit by him, and then, you know, I was always very interested, being a Montana native, a Montana boy.
Yeah.
Always very interested in the Indian culture and the various tribes that we have in Montana. So I always wanted to write about that as well. So those two things really kind of grew together in this latest book.
And this is your fifth book, correct?
Yes, this is number 5.
Walking Lazarus was the first one. Then you had The Dead Whisper On, along with The Unseen, Faces in the Fire, and now your latest, The Falling Away.
Right. Yeah, and it's been kind of a long, fun ride. And, you know, I suppose you could probably tell a little bit by the book titles that I like to write what I call noir bizarre. So,
right.
You know, the noir is very much that crime, mystery, dark underbelly of life. And then the bizarre is, you know, kind of that detour into the twilight zone. So that's essentially what all my books are kind of right in that area. Mystery and supernatural elements always seem to work their way in.
And your books do not have, like, one character that goes throughout. So all 5 of your books are pretty much completely standalone. Am I correct?
Yeah. Right now all the books are standalone, although I am one of those people who tends to like to reward readers who've read previous books, and so, you know, you'll have a character who's a minor character in a previous book and make, you know, become kind of more of a main character in a book down the road, and you kind of try to make some connections in the universe you're creating. And so I do have, you know, some characters that kind of work their way in and out of more than one book.
But yeah, but not the main one that just kind of comes throughout. So that's the so the good thing is that, you know, people can sit there and pick up, you know, of course they have to get The Falling Away, which is out, and, you know, and they need to get that one. But they can go back to any one of your four, go ahead and pick one of them up in any order that they would like to, and not feel that they missed something, which I think when they do that with some authors and they have, you know, five books out by one character, they kind of have to feel like they missed something. And, you know,
right.
do they want to invest the time to, you know, since this is book six of the character, go all the way
right.
back and read all five to get to number six?
Yeah, they're not connected storylines in any way. So, and that's something I enjoy doing. I like doing a different story with each book. That's not to say, I suppose, that I'd never do a series based on a character, on one single character. But in some ways, that seems to me that it would be a little more difficult to kind of keep revisiting the same character. And so I do admire writers who are able to do that and produce series. For me, it always seems like I want to start over each time and kind of explore a different world each time.
And it looks like that, you know, do you do a lot of touring for your latest books? Do you go out and do have a lot of tours outside of your normal area?
You know, I've done it off and on for various books. And so, you know, early on, especially, I went to Book Expo America and did a lot of regional book tours, and then went to different bookstores, did events, those kinds of things. It seems like with each successive book, just the ability to connect in online venues and do Skype interviews and radio interviews and, you know,
yeah.
blog talk radio, those kinds
yeah.
of things to take, seem to fit the same kind of bill. I think a lot of people are looking online for those kinds of connections rather than necessarily to the local brick-and-mortar store, which you can say, you know, I suppose you can make a case either way that that's a bad thing or it's a good thing, but it just seems to be the way, at least in my world, things are going. I'm doing a lot more interviews over the Internet and Skype and phone.
Right, and I think that that's probably the way that things are going to go in the future, just from looking at e-books in general to kind of see how they're starting to take over. I mean, how are your books selling as far as, like, e-books?
Well, you know,
are you seeing a big increase?
Well, I was going to say, my market is probably a little different from the traditional mystery suspense market. My publisher is Thomas Nelson out of Nashville. And so really kind of my main market are people who are interested in inspirational fiction and inspirational mystery, even though I'm kind of an odd duck in that particular pond as well. And so I don't think we've seen as much of an impact on that market specifically as we have on the general market suspense. Although, you know, my last two books have been on Kindle and ebook editions and audiobook, and I think we're starting to see more fragmentation of that. We're starting to see, you know, a bigger chunk of the sales start to go that way, and I certainly see it happening that way, but I also think it's really kind of an opportunity. I think something that would be very interesting and something we're not far away from is, you know, in the way that we have movies with DVDs that have all the extra deleted scenes and kind of the content behind the content. I think we'll be able to do those same kinds of things with books where, you know, certainly you can have deleted scenes, but you'd also have maybe little clips that are connected to certain parts of the book, and really kind of being able to do kind of a multimedia presentation and present that in, you know, an iPad format specifically is what I'm thinking of, which would be fun, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so here, let's go back to your latest book here, The Falling Away. I want to know, there's a question that just came in that wants to know, how much research went into writing this book?
I'm kind of one of those lazy people in that I always do research after, and maybe that's a little backward, But I'll always have the story idea and what I want, and so knowing, you know, that this is going to be a main character who's an American Indian and an Iraq war vet, and I'll just write it to be able to get the story, because for me, the story is what I always want to get out first. And then after I have that first draft done, that's when I kind of start going back in and doing my research and saying, okay, well, if they are, you know, dismantling bombs, what's the technology that's used for that, and what would the training be for that? And because he's a member of the Crow tribe, what would the ceremonies be for a returning soldier being welcomed back into the Crow tribe? And, you know, a lot of those details are what I kind of go back in and do as, I kind of look at it as infill in a lot of instances. So for me, the story is kind of the first thing, and then the research props up the story, I think, after the first thread is down on paper.
Now, looking back here at your first book, you know, which was Walking Lazarus until now, that The Falling Away, how have you seen your writing style change throughout your five books?
Well, that's been an interesting question, because I think, you know, in each of my books, I always try to, for me, for a writer, I think for a lot of people who write, when you sit down, you always are trying to do something that you're a little bit scared to try. And so if it's something you're a little scared to try, then that probably means it's a good thing. So in each of the books, I always just kind of present myself with a situation and try to think, what are some things, you know, what am I scared about trying in this book? And I think each time I kind of try to press it and make it a little bigger story in terms of stakes and in terms of what's happening. And so my very first book, Waking Lazarus, was a very, you know, personal novel in the sense that it was very regional and localized in one area, and essentially took place inside the head of, you know, just a very few characters. And I think the book since then, I start trying to get, you know, stranger and bigger storylines and really kind of starting to live inside the minds of several more characters rather than just concentrating on a few viewpoint characters.
Now, I'm reminding everybody here that we are speaking with author T.L. Hines, author of his latest book, The Falling Away. You can go to tlhines.com, and you're going to notice something when you go to his website. It's going to tell you, and I'm going to ask the question now, what does Wanna Be in My Next Book, what is that about?
You know, that's something I started from the very beginning is when I first got my book contract, I thought, well, I need to do something a little out of the box as far as marketing the work. And I've always kind of been a geek and interested in online communication anyway. So at that point, I started signing up people as volunteer book publicists on my website. So anyone who would just sign up as a volunteer book publicist and agree to just tell other people about the book and keep in touch with me and let me know what they're doing in return for that. I actually picked 100 of the publicists, the 100 most active publicists for the first book, and shared 10% of my first royalty statement with them.
Wow.
And then after that, I've named a character in each book after one of the publicists who sign up on my site. So that's kind of been the thing that I keep doing moving forward, and it's been fun for me, and it's fun to meet new people in that way. And I think it's very, you know, a reader-centric kind of thing of kind of reminding you that it's about the readers. And so just with each book going through and seeing people who are signing up and seeing people who are readers and kind of being in touch with them.
That is a really neat idea. You're the first person and first author I've ever heard saying, you know, about sharing your royalty check and getting them together like that for just helping, you know, helping you promote your book. I think that's such a fabulous idea. You know, that's very ingenious.
Well, yeah, it was a great idea, and I think it had worked wonders for me. And then, you know, I started off very blessed and started off well and had good sales, you know, from the very beginning with the first book. And Library Journal, you know, named it one of the 25 best genre books of the year. And so, you know, I started off with a bang, as it were. But of course, when you get named to one of those best of lists and then you're not making a list the next year, you think, oh my goodness, what's wrong with me now? My last book made it.
I know. It's like, what have you done for me lately kind of thing, isn't it? That's the way it always works out.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Now, we had another author on that I thought that she did something that was really interesting, and I want to know if this has ever happened to you, is have you ever had a book club call you up and say, we're reading your book for our book club, will you come on the phone with us when we discuss it and, you know, talk to us about it as we discuss it?
Yeah, I've done that a few times, and I've done several in-person book clubs, and it's always a blast. It's a lot of fun.
Did you get good food when you went there?
Yeah, it's always a good thing. Actually, one of the book clubs, it was kind of fun. They had this ornate chair that was almost like this throne or something, and they're like, here, sit in this chair. So it was like being, King Henry VIII or something for a night or something, because it was just this kind of large ornate chair. I'm not sure where they got it, but I think they'd got it just specifically for the event. You know, it's like, hey, this is the author chair. So it's always fun to do those things, whether it's on the phone or in person. And, it's always fun to, often when you're doing these kinds of things and you're doing events and speaking engagements and those kinds of things, you're speaking with a lot of people who haven't read the book, you know, and haven't read your work. And so it's fun to be able to be in a group with people who have read the book and kind of hear the questions that they ask. And it's more participation in the story, which is always a fun thing.
Now, excuse me, one of the funny things that I've always thought was interesting was, remember the movie Back to School, and he had Kurt Vonnegut write his paper for him, and then the English teacher says, you never read the book, and Kurt Vonnegut, you got the whole thing wrong. Have you ever sat back and listened to people talk about your book going, boy, they just sure didn't get this one, did they?
Yeah, it is kind of interesting. Sometimes it's the whole, like you're saying, oh, okay, well, they got that wrong. But I think on the opposite side of the equation is when I'll get asked the questions, or people will mention or write something in a review that's kind of this insight into the story that you as the author didn't really have, you know. I enjoy how the author was able to demonstrate, you know, the internal conflict of the character because of, you know, this situation he was in while defusing a bomb, or, you know, just something like that. And you're like, oh, you know, I hadn't really intended that, but it actually works pretty well. And I like that the person picked up on that and ran with it. And boy, it kind of makes you feel intelligent.
Right. Yeah. Cause I always kind of thought that was very funny when people would say that, and, you know, like my daughter will come home and say, oh, my English teacher said I got this wrong. And it's like, you know what? How does she know what the author was thinking? I'm like, I'll tell you what. I'll call the author myself and ask him.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole of literary criticism in general, you know.
Right. It's such opinionated.
Well, it's all subjective. And, you know, people even just within their own criticisms, I think, are often not very true to their own criticisms, where they're like, well, I didn't like this because it wasn't realistic. And you know, it's Harry Potter. And it's like, well, of course it's not realistic. It's a fantasy.
Exactly.
But, and that's just kind of a broad example. I'm not saying that from any specifics, but I mean, I think people are very, there's no harm in it. We're all subjective. We all live inside our own heads. And sometimes we respond to books that do a good job of getting us outside of our own heads, and sometimes it just never quite works for us.
Now, this might be this might be a weird question.
I like weird questions.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not really weird as in weird, because I am kind of weird, but it's not really like that. But it's like, do you still think your best writing is still inside you that you haven't let out yet?
I'd like to think that. You know, it's true confession time for me, in that maybe I'm different from most authors, but I have a sneaking suspicion that I'm not, and that my true fear is that my best writing's behind me, and I'm never going to come up with anything as good as what I've written and written before. And I think I laugh at that, but I also think that's part of what motivates a lot of writing, is that internal angst as you're working through that angst. I think writers are probably tend to be more internally conflicted than maybe the general populace. So I think I'm probably almost the opposite of what you're asking in that, you know, I have that dark heart inside of me thinks, gee, I'm never going to come up with something as good as what I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine certainly there are authors out there who are like, oh, if I could just, and I think there is something to that sense too of when you have any book come out, I don't think, at least from my perspective, I'm never totally satisfied with it. I mean, I'd tinker with every book for 5 years if I could get away with it. But when you have to hand,
right, every
hand
year,
one
yeah.
in each year, you kind of have that finite period on it when it's like, okay, we can't do anything else on it. So in some instance, it always feels like, boy, I could just be doing more things on this, and I wish I would have done this differently. And people always ask me, too, well, what's it like to go back and read your books? And I'm always mystified by that question because I really can't read my books. I can't sit down and read my books once they come out and get, you know, 10 pages in without having that internal editor come on so much and just kind of start saying, oh, if I would have done this a little differently or this a little differently. And so, you know, maybe some authors can do it, but I sure can't.
Well, my producer just handed me a question. We had somebody called in, but I guess they were too shy to get on the phone to ask it for you. So they handed it to me, and it says, for those that are new to your work, is there one mainstream author that you would compare yourself to?
That I would compare myself to? I don't know, yeah. But I can tell you the one author that I constantly get people saying once they read something of mine, I would say 90% of the people that I hear from and say, oh, you remind me of, and that's Dean Koontz. I always get Dean Koontz comparisons. And that's interesting for me, having only ever read one Dean Koontz novel myself.
Which one was that?
The Odd Thomas is the only Dean Koontz. Yeah. But I certainly appreciate the comparison. And,
yeah, I was
going
to say, if you're
going
to be compared to somebody, heck, nothing like
yeah.
Koontz, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's partially because, you know, we kind of both play in the same sandbox as far as, you know, I think from talking to people and just kind of seeing his basic plot lines that he's big into government conspiracies and, you know, obviously the very odd, literally in some cases, the odd main characters. And I think that's kind of the same kinds of stories I'm drawn to writing myself.
Well, I'll tell you, TL, it's been great having you on. I mean, we're already out of time here. And so, everybody, we've been talking here. This is TL Hines. You go to tlhines.com. He's got a fascinating website. You know, be one of his publicists on there, and you could be in his next book. You just never
that
know.
Sounds,
well, yeah,
that
you got a lot of great
yeah.
information. You have so much great information on here. You probably have one of the most in-depth author sites I think I've ever run across, so it's fabulous.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very
so
much.
So, again, so that's tlhines.com. His newest book is The Falling Away, so you need to go out and pick that up. So, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, TL, and I hope you have a great one. And keep us up to date so we can bring you back on when your next book comes out.
That sounds like a plan to me. I'd love to do so.
Okay, thanks a lot. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
So, everybody, that was T.L. Hines, author of The Falling Away. Again, tlhines.com. It has to be one of the most in-depth websites I think I've ever seen from an author. You need to go. You can be in his next book. You can be his publicist. Heck, he shared 10% royalties from the first book to the people that went out there and helped publicize his book. So you want to go check that out. We've definitely had a fascinating packed show here with Spencer Quinn. And then we just had T.L. Hines. So both of those authors, you definitely want to go and, you know, check out their work and see what you can find out. Because if you don't know about them, that's why we have the show, for you to find out who the authors are and, you know, what their stories are about. Because there's so many authors that write suspense, mystery, thriller, horror genres that you can't keep track of all of them. Heck, we can't keep track of all of them. We get 40 to 50 books a week, and we don't even know who they all are. So we're trying to make sure that we bring, you know, those up and coming, those new authors, those debut authors, those mainstream authors, any kind of author we want to bring to you so you guys can find more and more out about those people. And so that's, you know, that's one of the reasons that we love to do this radio show, and that's one of the reasons why we love to do the magazine, and we just love to do what we do here. So I want to remind everybody coming up, yes, this is announcement time again, is that on October the 12th, we have Todd Ritter and Mark Greeny. We're doing a special show on October the 13th with author and lawyer Alan Dershowitz, who is writing his book, The Trials of Zion. That's going to be on at 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern time, and it's only 30 minutes. So you want to make sure you check that out. Again, all shows are archived, so even if you can't get it live, that's fine, because our RSS feed and everything goes out to iTunes. We're on Zoom now, Netflix, 75 podcasting sites, Blueberry, every place you can find us on, you can find us out there to listen to the show. You know, just podcast on iTunes or Zoom, then download it, listen to it later to your iPhone. You know, we have a lot of great people coming up. Erica Spindler and Allison Leota on the 19th. James Rollins and Iris Johansson on the 22nd. Steve Berry and Jeremy Robinson on the 26th. And then we have Alan Jacobson coming back for an encore presentation with John Miller on the 29th. We also made mention here that on the 15th of October, which is next Friday, there will be no show, because we are going to BoucherCon in San Francisco, so we're going to be mingling with the authors and talking to them. And if you're going to be there, please look us up and, you know, come up and say hi and, you know, let us know, you know, that you read us. And, you know, because we do this for you. We don't do this for ourselves. We want to make sure that we're the number one resource place that you guys go in order to find your information out about the greatest genre of writing that is out there today, which is mystery, suspense, thriller, and horror. I think there's nothing better than that. November 30th, a very, very, very special show. We're going to have Patricia Cornwell on, and you know, everybody knows her from her Kay Scarpetta novels, one of the greatest authors that we've had here of, you know, our time. Even bigger, I guess, if you want to put that into a bigger category, is sometime at the end of January, early February, we haven't nailed down the date yet, is we are going to have author Stephen King on the show for you sometime in there. You have to check it out to find the date. I don't know if it's going to be on a Tuesday or Friday. We might do his own special show with just 30 minutes of Stephen King, but we are going to have him on the show. Clive Cussler was going to be on the show in November. We're just not sure of the date. We are working on other authors. We also found out today that John Saul is going to be on in November, closer to November the 23rd, so you want to make sure you stick around for that. So if you want to find out all the information, you can go to suspensemagazine.com, go to Suspense Radio, check out the interviews. We always put up the guest list. We try to do it a month in advance. You can email us at editor@suspensemagazine.com. Our print edition, our electronic edition is ready to go. We will be posting exactly where you can go find the magazine in your hometown, on your newsstand, to pick it up. We want it to sell out so they order triple the next time, and just to keep this thing rolling, because the train's left the station. Now we need it to pick up speed. So remember, queenwriter.com, tell her you want a monthly newsletter. That's Star Arena. Check out her book, In the Name of Revenge. Terry Ann Armstrong, check out Morning Menace. Scott Fadd, he has his book, The King of Nod. You want to go check those out. So, you know, we're coming down here to the end of another fabulous show. I want to thank you guys so much for being a part of it. Please let us know how we can do things better or who you'd like to hear. Otherwise, this is John Robb saying again, thank you very much. We will see you on Tuesday night, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern. Good night, everybody.